So this is one more week on verse 78. And again, when you listen to this verse is so deep. It's really, it's as vast as water. And it's about everything. It's just about everything. Nothing in the world is as soft and yielding as water. Nothing in the world is as soft and yielding as water. Yet for dissolving the hard and inflexible, nothing can surpass it. Nothing in the world is as soft and yielding as water. Yet for dissolving the hard and inflexible, nothing can surpass it. The soft overcomes the hard. The gentle overcomes the rigid. Everyone knows this is true, but few can put it into practice. Therefore, the master remains serene in the midst of sorrow. Evil cannot enter his heart because he has given up helping. He is people's greatest help. Because he has given up helping, he is people's greatest help. True words seem paradoxical. Therefore, the master remains serene in the midst of sorrow. Evil cannot enter his heart. Because he has given up helping, he is people's greatest help. True words seem paradoxical. So I thought tonight, most important to simply sit in the presence of water. But I thought it might be helpful, worthwhile to unpack the last lines of this verse. So when he writes, the master remains serene in the midst of sorrow, it's not just sorrow. And it's not necessarily a serenity that we think of as some kind of peaceful, serene state. It's the ability to stay present with whatever is arising. It's the willingness to embrace whatever is arising. That's how we stay. The way we stay serene in the midst of sorrow or hatred or rage or discomfort or torment or depression or anger or hurt or feeling cold or feeling hot or hunger or whatever uncomfortable experience we find ourselves in, the way to stay serene in that challenge is the mystery of embrace, right? It's the mystery of surrender. It's the mystery of entering into. It's the mystery of, I want to say merge, but it's not a merge where one loses one's boundary. So it's a very mysterious merge. It's an allowing, it's an opening, it's a not pushing away. What we do, the hardening project is a project of pushing away from whatever is arising that we don't like, doesn't feel good, doesn't feel comfortable. For whatever reason, we've been conditioned to have a negative attitude about it, whatever it may be. And so we dissociate, we push away from the experience, trying to create space between us and the yucky feeling. The problem is, that's not real space. The space of dissociation is nothing but a lot of toxicity and alienation and separation. So the more we push away, the more isolated and alienated and uncomfortable we actually become. Even if in the moment, avoidance and denial sometimes in the moment feel great, but it's an illusion. Because we're allowing this reservoir of yuckiness to just get collected in the unconscious, and it pulsates in the unconscious, creating more discomfort, more dis-ease with ourself, and ultimately even hardening into actual physical disease. So we want to really practice curiosity rather than pushing away, turning away. And we also want to practice embracing, just embracing whatever it is. Just, hello, welcome. What are you here to show me? How can I be with you? Let me be with you. Show me what you are. Take me into your mystery. It can't be all bad, even though right now I'm not feeling too great. Yes? It's a mystery and it's a paradox. The final line of this verse, two words seem paradoxical. And the reason true words seem paradoxical, they're actually not paradoxical. They only seem paradoxical to the mind that's mired in duality. Because the truth contains everything, right? The truth contains the so-called good and the so-called bad, right? In fact, it even contains the true and the false. It contains everything. It's a whole. It's an integrated whole that's not... It's not separate from anything. And so to those of us who have been conditioned to live in this dualistic mind, truth often presents like a paradox. But where the paradox, you know? You know, and that's another example. When something doesn't make sense, we're trained to push it away, you know, harden against it. Well, that's irrational. That's irrational. That's not scientific. How can you prove that? And we push it away. And in that way, we create these little rigid boxes for ourselves to live in. And we're missing the big picture. And in a way, like, who cares about missing the big picture? We're missing ourselves. We're missing the amazing totality and complexity and splendor of ourself in all of our wacky, wonderful, contradictory, paradoxical humanness, right? Evil cannot enter his heart. The reason evil cannot enter his heart, and evil, it's such a loaded word, but again, evil or anything yucky, it cannot enter his heart, her heart, the heart, because it's all fluid. So evil, it's there already. It's part of the great ocean of everythingness. And again, in another one of the great paradoxes of the wisdom path, the more we allow ourselves to become what, according to the yogic path, is our true nature, otherwise known as self with a capital S, otherwise known as Satchit Ananda, the more we allow ourselves to be that, to identify with that, it holds everything. And nothing can harm it, because there's no more harm. There's simply isness. There's no language for this. I can sing it much better than I can speak it. Talking to my friend Robert the other day, we talk about this a lot, and he was saying, you know, there aren't words, and I was saying, I know, I can sing it, but I can't speak it. But I know it's true. Yes. And I love this one. This is such a great teaching on the ego. Because he has given up helping, he is people's greatest help. I love that one. Because he has given up helping, he is people's greatest help. And it's so true. It it's so important. I know for me, in the work that I do, it's so important day in and day out to be really checking in with what motivates me, to be really checking in with any unconscious drive in me that wants to be, oh, I don't know, respected, revered, adored. That's an ego. It's just a big old ego trip, you know? Any of us who work in the so-called helping professions, who are doing it because we want to help, need to really check in with ourselves. Because that's not a reason, because then our helping is tainted by desire. Then our helping is tainted by the ego's idea of what help is. You know, then the helping is, it's just, and it becomes tainted by our own projections. It's very, very tricky. Very, very tricky, very complex stuff. But we really need to just keep checking in so we can keep it really clear. Keep it really clear. Keep our projections out of the space between us and other people. Otherwise, we do an awful lot of harm. We just do so much harm. And we don't realize it's all unconscious. We hold back in situations where maybe we should be more assertive because we have this idea, well, I have to be the nice spiritual teacher. You know, that's not good either. Whenever we're caught up in an identity, whenever we're living and working from an idea of what we think we're supposed to be, as opposed to a full-hearted, full-throated embrace of what we are, again, in all our imperfection. Because that's what makes real connection. Then that's what allows the water possibility to arise between us. Because when we're just real, 100% authentic, real, in all our messy, human, blah-de-blah stuff, that's when connection happens. And in connection, the people that we are talking to or being with, or whatever, have the experience of being seen. And when we have the experience of being seen, everything is fine, right? But if we're more caught up in our identity, in our idea of what we're supposed to be, we're not there. So no seeing is really happening. It's all projection. It can become a very narcissistic projection. So that's, in my opinion, what these lines are saying. Because he has given up helping, he is people's greatest help. There's no agenda. He doesn't care if anybody likes him. He simply is what he is because that happens to be what he is. And he is surrendered to that. He is embracing that, or she, or we, you know. This two words seem paradoxical. So let that settle. Let's see how we're doing with time. But I'll tell you this one story, then we'll chant some more, because it's such a good story. When I was looking for Mary Oliver tonight, I couldn't find any Mary Oliver that was really jumping off the page at me tonight, which is very rare. And then I pulled down the book first. It was like, oh, of course. We're talking about water. So I'll tell you, I'll read this great story. Unless, would you rather chant or do you want a story? It's quick. Story. Okay. Okay. Oh, I have to read you something. This is so back to the water and the sacred feminine, which are the same. In the archetypal realm, in which we spend so much of our time in this class, the sacred feminine is many things, and one of the many, many, many hugenesses that it is water. So this goes, the land was dead and desert, so that they lost the voice of the wells, and the maidens who were in them. It's so beautiful. The land was dead and desert, so that they lost the voices of the wells and the maidens who were in them. Yes? The spirit of the fountain never dies. It is called the mysterious feminine. Frail, frail it is, hardly existing, but touch it. It will never run dry. That's Tao Te Ching, but same. And it's really in the Western, I guess we could say Christian tradition, it's the Grail story. But this is sort of a Hindu version of the Grail story. And it's a story, I don't know this one. I've never come across it until, and I mean, I've had this book forever. And I just pulled it down the other day, and I came to this story. You can see how old I've had this book. It's like so broken. So it goes like this. Once Vishnu was riding through the air on the sun bird Garuda. Both of them, filled with their sense of self, small self, saw in Vishnu the highest, most irresistible and universal being. So that's a lot of ego. In this telling, Vishnu and later Brahma are very caught in their identities, and they are not embracing the totality of life. Once Vishnu was riding through the air on the Garuda bird, both of them, filled with their sense of self, saw in Vishnu the highest, most irresistible and universal being. They flew past the throne of the great goddess, but gave her no heed. Fly on, said Vishnu to Garuda. Then the great goddess poured rigidity upon them, and they could not stir from the spot. Vishnu, in his rage, shook her seat with both hands, but could not move it. This is such a great metaphor of that hardening. I'm fabulous. But it's dissociated from the ground of being. There's no fabulousness when we're dissociated from the ground of being. Instead, he fell and sank to the bottom of the world ocean because he needed a major kick in the head, right? So he literally has to be plunged into the bottom of the world ocean. Unable to stir, he lost consciousness and became rigid, defenseless, and lifeless. Then Brahma went in search of him and tried to lift him, but he also fell under the same. The word he uses here is enchantment. I wouldn't use that word. And grew rigid. They're under the spell of their own ego, is what they are. The same fate befell all the other gods who went with Indra in search of the first two and tried to raise them from the bottom of the sea. Only Shiva, of course, we can always count on Shiva, understood what had happened and led them all back to do homage to her, to do acknowledgement of her. That's really what homage is, right? It's just, it's opening one's eyes and acknowledging what is. It's opening into the mystery, not thinking we're so fabulous we can fly on without touching it. And so he taught them how to do proper homage to Devi, to the goddess. And then the goddess revealed herself and bade all the gods drink of the waters of her womb and bathe therein. Then you will be free of the imprisonment of your ego, and thus will you find your place. And so it's a lovely little story that, like so many of the lovely little stories we have, is reminding us that we need to soften into the fertile darkness, otherwise known as the ground of being, otherwise known as that from which we arise and fall back into, otherwise known as, like I said, I can sing it, but I can't really speak it. We don't want to cut ourselves off from that which we truly are, even though it's mysterious and sometimes seems really hard to find and sometimes seems so uncanny and so hidden But it's never really hiding. It's always here. We're the ones who hide from it. So let those stories percolate inside of you. And since everyone loved the Lakshmi Murti and the Dhumavati last week, we'll do those again.